Here is your Radio Theater Channel weekly podcast for download. The RTC still has the very best old-time radio on the live streaming. And if it's music you love, tune in to the RTC Music Channel, where this link and many others are on our website at oldtimeradiolisten.com. Now, here's Jim.
Thank you, Tim. I'm Jim Dolan. I'm your host for today. And today we're going to do something a little bit different. We're going to compare the adults to the kids in the talent of answering questions. So these geniuses, adult geniuses and kid geniuses, we're going to listen to both of them. Starting off with the adults, the show is called Information Please, and it's starring Rex Stout. He's the guest there, and Moss Hart. And this is from 1939. And following this, we're going to have Quiz Kids, and it's from the International Trade Show, and that's from 1950. So here's Information Please.
Information Please, presented each week at this time by Canada Dry, famous the world over for its fine beverages. Wake up, America. Time to stump the experts. Every week at this time, Canada Dry gives you a chance to turn the tables on the authorities at a profit. Here's how it's done. You may submit from 1 to 3 original questions per letter. If your question is used, you receive $5 and $10 additional if it stumps the board. So you may win $15 in all. Don't worry if our editorial staff changes or edits your question slightly. All questions become the property of Information Please. Letters with questions are to be addressed to Canada Dry, 1 Pershing Square, New York City. And now may I present our Master of Ceremonies, Mr. Clifton Fadiman, literary critic of the New Yorker magazine. Mr. Fadiman.
Thank you, Mr. Cross. Ladies and gentlemen, Information Please, week after week, pursues its happy-go-lucky way, unrehearsed and uninhibited. This evening, our unrehearsable and uninhibitable quartet consists of 4 bulging brows. Our 2 old hands are on the job, ready to be put on the spot. First, John Kieran, to whom we may apply Dante's phrase about Aristotle. That all right with you, Mr. Kieran?
I hope so.
Master of those who know. And second, Franklin P. Adams, columnist to the New York Post. Third, we have Rex Stout, creator of the Nero Wolf Mysteries. And fourth, Moss Hart, co-author of You Can't Take It With You, The American Way, and numerous other Broadway smash hits. Now remember, my fine feathered experts, to raise your hands if you think you know the answer. And if you miss, Canada Dry's cheerful cash register rings up $10, and out goes a crisp new bill to the fortunate questioner. We're off. The first one comes from Helen Rujan of the Bronx, and she asks you to relapse for the moment into your first childhood, gentlemen. Just go back 30, 40 years.
Oh, nonsense.
Well, 27 for you,
thank
Mr.
you.
Hart. And I'm going to ask you to complete for me the following childhood chants. You've all had childhoods. I'll do the chanting, and you do the responding. It's raining, it's pouring. Mr. Kieran.
The old man is snoring.
Very good. Second. I love coffee, I love tea.
I had no childhood, just...
Leave you out of this?
Well, if I guess it, I'll guess it.
Mr. Adams.
Some about a little brown jug.
Not a bit of it. Not a bit of it. I love coffee, I love tea, Mr. Stout.
I love you if you love me.
I love the boys and the boys love me. That is the proper answer. I'm sorry, I have to count that wrong, though it was a nice attempt, Mr. Stout. Get 4 out of 5 on this. Third, I asked my mother for 50 cents. Mr. Kieran.
To see the elephant jump the fence.
Ah, you had a real childhood, Mr. Kieran. No more pencils, no more books.
No more teachers' nasty looks.
That's right. You knew that one, didn't you?
That I knew.
Dirty.
Yeah. It's often...
Dirty looks, yes, that's right.
Often sassy. Take your choice.
I had nasty
dirty
teachers.
Or nasty. 5 and last. Tell your mama to hold her tongue. Tell your mama to hold her tongue.
We never said that.
You were brought up
when
in a nice
you were young.
When I was young.
All nice boys brought up in nice neighborhoods. Look what they turned out to be. Well, the answer is she had a fellow when she was young.
Ah.
She had a fellow when she was young. How far back do you suppose in history these childhood chants go? Any idea? I haven't.
About an hour and a half.
I know it's new to you, Mr. Adams. I think they're very, very old. Many of them go back to similar chants in Old England, the 14th and 15th centuries.
I thought they were Bronx chants.
They're Bronx now. They've been transferred to the Bronx, but they had an English origin in most cases. But we got to only 3 out of 5 on that. That's going to cost Canada Dry $10. I like to begin that way, gentlemen. What can we do with a second coming from Mr. Birdsall, Miss Birdsall Robb of Quebec, Canada? In what books, plays, or movies are the following stolen? First, an antique handkerchief embroidered with strawberries. He couldn't ask me to be more specific than that. It's a play. Mr. Curran.
Well, I didn't see it, but maybe that's in Othello.
It is in Othello. Very good, Mr. Curran. That's quite right. All right. In what book, play, or movie is a piece of beef stolen? Mr. Curran.
Well, that's in the old nursery rhyme. Taffy came to my house and stole a piece of beef.
Yes, that's right. It really isn't a book, play, or movie. Or maybe it's been transferred to the screen, has it? I don't think so. Mr. Hart?
No. Not
a bad plot. It's not a bad plot.
I'll take it.
Eddie Robinson picture. Three, a prince. In what play is a prince stolen? Mr. Adams.
Gondoliers.
The Gondoliers by Gilbert and Sullivan. Very good. In what book, play, or movie are a sheet, a pewter spoon, 6 candles, and a shirt stolen? Can you remember all that? Mr. Adams.
The Prince and the Pauper.
No, you've got the right author, but you have the wrong book. I'll give you 10% credit on that.
Huckleberry Finn.
Huckleberry Finn is the right answer, Mr. Stout, when Huckleberry Finn and Tom are planning to rescue Jim. Sorry you came in late on that. Sorry you came in so early, Mr. Adams. In what book, play, or movie are 4 dead men stolen or otherwise removed?
I think it's a slight case of murder.
Yes, it's a slight case of murder starring Eddie Robinson. That's quite correct. We got 3 out of 4 on that, which is quite correct. The next question from Mr. Don Lane of Washington, D.C. Oh, I like this one. I'm going to ask you, gentlemen, each of you in turn, sit back in your chair, Mr. Adams, that's right, kindly to give the name of your present United States congressman and the number of the congressional district in which you reside. Something I think that every American citizen should know. And as the boys puzzle their brains, trying to, in the first place, remember the congressman, and second place, trying to remember where they reside, I'm going to ask the audience listening in to try to remember the names of their congressmen and the number of their congressional district. I'll begin with you, Mr. Curran. Mr. John Curran, do you live at 4506 Riverdale Avenue, Bronx, New
That's
York?
Right.
And your congressman is?
Buckley.
Charles A. Buckley, correct. And your district is?
23rd.
Very good. Very good. If the others do as well. And Mr. Buckley's politics, Mr. Curran?
Very Democrat.
Very Democrat. All right. Mr. Franklin P. Adams, do you reside, live, and otherwise inhabit the town of Westport, Conn?
Weston Conn.
I beg pardon, Weston. And you're a congressman? You have a congressman, Mr. Adams? I don't mean a personal congressman all for yourself.
I don't know.
You don't? Are you surprised that you don't know?
I know who represents us in Hartford. Willis Banks.
Well, it's nice to get a little plug for Mr. Willis Banks, but unfortunately that's not the answer to the question. The answer is Albert E. Austin. And in what district do you live, Mr. Adams? What congressional district?
First district.
Now, 4. You're only 3 out. And do you know whether the Honorable Mr. Austin is a Republican or a Democrat?
He's a Republican.
He's a Republican. You got that right. That's one wrong. Now, Mr. Moss Hart, do you reside at the Waldorf Astoria Towers, New York City?
Mm-hmm.
What floor? Because this may affect our...
Answer. That doesn't affect the congressman.
You don't think so? No. Do you know who your congressman is? Very well-known congressman. Been receiving a great deal of publicity lately. Never mind, Mr. Adams. Mr. Hart has to answer this question. Mr. Hart, I'm sorry.
This is a stab. Bruce Barton.
Bruce Barton is correct. And your district is?
50th Street and Park Avenue.
Yes. Would you like to pick a number?
I don't.
It's the Ace of Spades. 17th District. 17th District.
Oh, that's the Silk Stocking.
Yes, it is, and you should know that.
Yeah,
part.
Yeah,
right on. And now, Mr. Rex Stout, do you live at High Meadow, Brewster, New York?
Yes.
Your congressman is?
Hamilton Fish.
Junior, yes. And what district?
Mine.
Is it generally known as Stout
District?
He
represents my district.
I know he. You would like to give me a little more information in the way of a number. Just pick a number. Pick a number.
I think he could tell you.
Well, the answer is the 26th District. Apparently, the congressmen, at least for two of the gentlemen here, are the men nobody knows. 2 out of 4, not good enough. $10 going to Mr. Lane, courtesy of Canada Dry. Thanks. Tough question. I hope everybody listening knows the answer and knows who their congressman is in their district.
How I got that, I don't know.
I don't know. You're a genius.
He gave it to you.
Yes, he did. Yes,
telepathy. The next question from Mr. J. Bellis of St. Louis, Missouri, involves a knowledge of the stage and the movies. Under what circumstances did Ethel Barrymore sell petticoats? There are going to be 5 of these. I'm going to ask for 4 out of 5. Mr. Adams.
In Edna Ferber's play, Emma McChesney.
Yes, Our Mrs. McChesney, I think it was called in its play
Mrs.
form.
McChesney.
That's quite correct. Yeah, under what circumstances did Betty Lawford take a bath in public? Mr. Hart seems
in
to know that.
In the women. In the women.
In the women.
Claire,
yes.
Booth's play.
Very good.
It was a bubble bath.
It was. How did she get those bubbles? Do you know? I've always wanted to know.
The stagehands made them off stage.
Oh, off stage. I'm glad to know
to
that.
I see it. Good deal.
Yes. Under what circumstances did Andrea Leeds commit suicide? Mr. Hart again.
That was in the picture, Stage Door.
In the screen version of Stage Door. Very good. Under what circumstances did Claudette Colbert steal artichokes? Steal artichokes. Mr. Stout.
When she was hungry.
Yes. Very
I know.
That's very quick wit.
I know.
Mr. Hart.
In Tavarich.
In Tavarich.
In the
screen,
picture.
In the screen version of Tavarich. Very good. We're all right on this one. We've got 4 out of 5. Here's the 5th. Under what circumstances did Leslie Howard read poetry in a hash house? Mr. Hart again.
In the Petrified Forest.
Yes. In both the screen and stage.
And
version.
Stage.
Mr. Hart, I'm glad to see you paying so much favorable attention to the work of your contemporaries.
Thank you.
You don't mind if I call them your contemporaries?
Not
you?
At all.
It sounds so much better than colleagues. Contemporaries seem to last longer somehow. The next question from Mr. H.
Sounds
Williams.
Better than predecessors, too, Mr. Bradley.
Doesn't it, though, Mr. Stout? The next question from Mr. H. Williams of Dallas, Texas, involves your knowledge of botany.
Oh, that's fine.
Well, you want to get out of this, Mr. Hart?
I may leave.
All right, now you just get out. Now, I'll probably get Mr. Kier and Mr. Adams coming in on this. Mr. Stout, I know, is a gardener. How are the edible parts of the following classified by botanists? For example, celery would be classified as a stem or a stalk, or as a musical overture to a dinner, usually. How would you classify tomato or tomato? Pick 1 out of 2. Mr. Kieran.
Well, some people call it a fruit, and others call it a vegetable. I call it a fruit myself.
I call it a fruit myself, too. That's 2 against the other people. Fruit is correct. It is, in fact, a berry, isn't it?
Yeah, it's a
just
form of berry.
A sort of berry that's gone through an inflationary period. coconut. How would you classify coconut? Mr. Stout.
Coconut is a seed.
Coconut, I am afraid, is not a seed, precisely.
Botanically?
No, not botanically. A fruit. It would be classified as a fruit by a botanist.
A weapon.
Because it began as a seed. It began as a seed. But let's give it the benefit of its maturity. How would you classify a cucumber? A cucumber?
Indigestible. For me.
We call that literary criticism, Mr. Hart, rather than botanical knowledge. Cucumber would be classified, Mr. Kieran, as...
Well, it's a subterranean seed pod.
Subterranean seed pod. Well, you don't expect me to argue that with you.
Well, it certainly is.
If I called it a fruit, would that get by you?
That'd be all right.
All right. I think a subterranean seed pod sounds dandy to me.
He buries them before he eats them, Mr. Bradley.
How would you classify a cauliflower? Mr. Stout.
It's a flower.
As a flower. That didn't fool you, did it?
No, that was easy.
And how would you classify, finally, those little things that they give you in Chinese restaurants? You know those little things entirely surrounded by wrinkles, lychee nuts? Mr. Stout, how would you classify
them? I maintain that both the coconut and the lychee nut are seeds. Of course, the lychee nut is a dried fruit, I suppose.
Yes.
But I...
Would you stop there, and then I can count your right?
Yes, I'll
stop. Very well. 4 out of 5 on that. We can come back to this after a while if it still worries you, Mr. Stout. I quite agree that my botanical knowledge is inferior to yours. So far, Canada Dry announces a loss of $20. Nothing. Now, perhaps Canada Dry's own expert would like to ease the tension. Mr. Cross, the microphone.
Thank you, Mr. Fadiman. One of the most painfully realistic scenes in modern drama appears in the play You Can't Take It With You, written in collaboration by one of this evening's experts, Mr. Morse Hart. When the Kirbys call unexpectedly, the Sycamores have nothing in the house to offer them in the way of refreshment. Great panic ensues. Fortunately, in real life, we need not be unprepared when guests appear without warning. For many weeks, I've been suggesting that you keep Canada Dry ginger ale and sparkling Canada Dry water on hand for emergencies of this kind. Everybody likes this fine club soda because it gives extra life and sparkle to their favorite drink. And everyone enjoys a glass of Canada Dry ginger ale, for it picks you up, aids digestion, and refreshes inwardly. Or in a word, it's gingervating. So don't be a sycamore. Don't allow yourself to be caught without refreshments when unexpected guests drop in. Put Canada Dry, the champagne of ginger ales, and sparkling Canada Dry water on your shopping list tomorrow.
Spoken like a Barrymore, Mr. Cross. And clock in exactly 65 seconds. We'll go on with the program and ask a question sent in by Mr. Edgar Dannenberg of this city. Five parts, get all of them. Mention a song which you might dedicate to each of the following people. An undertaker. Let's start from the bottom. An undertaker. Mr. Adams.
More work for the undertaker.
Yes, that's very good. A good old song. How about another one, Mr. Hart?
Jeepers Creepers.
Jeepers Creepers. Very good. Any other suggestions, Mr. Kieran? Allow that ghoulish imagination of yours free play, Mr. Kieran.
Well, there's one called Bury Me Not on the Lone Prairie.
That would be all right. Get Out and Get Under might be one possible. Yes. By making chicken. Very good. Very good. How about a chiropodist? What song would you dedicate to a chiropodist? Mr. Adams.
Five little fingers and five little toes. 10 little fingers and 10 little toes.
And that's all now. We got to stop at 10. Yes, that's right. 10 little fingers and 10 little toes. Another one? Yes, Mr. Fox.
I've got you under my skin.
Say, that's very good. Mr. Stout.
My hero's got clay feet.
Fantasy is flying free this evening. May I throw one in? Way down yonder in the cornfield.
Oh, no.
A banker. What song would you dedicate to a banker?
To what?
A banker. A banker. You must have met a banker, Mr. Hart, at one time or other. On the wrong end of the wicket, usually, Mr.
There's
Hart.
There's a song called Hold Tight.
Right. That's a very good one. Very good one, Mr. Hart. Any other suggestions? Mr. Adams.
The Banks of the Wabash.
I let that in, though I hate to do it. Any other suggestions?
Mr. Diller a dollar.
Diller a dollar, yes. Liberty League, it's time to ring again. What did you say, Mr.
The man who broke the bank at Monte Carlo.
That's right. It was a theme song for what? Where did that song appear?
The Bowery. No, it was in a play on the... It was produced on the Bowery, but it was a different song.
All right, what song would you dedicate to a fireman? A fireman? That's a rather easy one. A fireman. Mr. Hart.
Get Hot.
Get Hot.
There's right. A song called Get Hot.
Yes, there is. Mm-hmm.
That old nursery song, Scotland's Burning.
Very nice. Very nice, Mr. Stout. Let's have a couple more. Mr. Adams.
Another one called Fireman Save My Child.
I knew you'd remember that one, Mr. Adams. It takes you back, doesn't it? How about Mother, 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 Turn a Hose on Me? You don't like that. All right, we'll throw that one out. A football player. Mr. Kieran, we ought to get one from you on this. Dedicate a song to a football player. What song?
Sticks and stones will break my bones.
That's what we call a nursery chant. You learned that 15 minutes ago. Not precisely a song. Mr. Stout.
The same old pig in the parlor. That's rather cryptic. Pigskin. Football.
Cryptic. You think that's cryptic? That's ultra cryptic. Oh, ultra super cryptic. How about another one? Mr. Kieran.
Please go away and let me sleep.
Football player, well, maybe some of those you've seen. Well, they got 5 out of 5 on that. The next one comes from a very eminent author, indeed, Mr. Upton Sinclair of Pasadena, California. Full of famous people tonight. I want you to name 5 characters from the Old Testament, and I want you to state what each did to deserve the description here given. And you're going to get 5 out of 5, or I'll know the reason why. I will probably know the reason why. The most soluble character from the Old Testament. Mr. Adams.
Lot's wife.
Why?
She turned to salt.
Yeah, turned to a pillar of salt. Let me have a chemical formula, Mr. Adams, for salt.
NaCl.
Very good. Very good. Very easy. The most indigestible. The most indigestible. Mr. Hart.
You wouldn't go back to songs, huh?
Well, that's the last question I'd like to indulge in.
Nebuchadnezzar?
Most indigestible. He himself was not indigestible,
oh,
I shouldn't
oh,
think,
grass.
Would you?
Yes, he ate grass, is what
yes,
I meant.
Yes, he himself was not indigestible. Uh-huh. Mr. Adams.
Jonah.
Jonah, yes, terribly indigestible. Lived in the whale's belly. The great discomfort of the whale. Now, who was the strictest vegetarian?
Nebuchadnezzar.
Ah, very good, Mr. Hart. Very good, Mr. Hart. Nebuchadnezzar, who did eat grass as oxen. And the outstanding monopolist of the Old Testament. The outstanding monopolist. Mr. Curate.
Joseph.
Why do you say that?
Because he gathered up all the crops in Egypt.
Yeah.
And he
and
had
stored them for seven fat years.
Yes, yeah, yes. Yeah. This is all
a more dangerous one was Solomon. He gathered up all the wives, didn't he?
Say, there's a monopoly. Imagine what the SEC
dangerous
would do
to
him
to whom,
if he were
Solomon?
Alive today. How about the severest music critic? This is really a sticker. The severest music critic in the Old Testament.
David.
Why do you say that? Critic, I say. Critic.
Oh, critic.
Critic. You know what a critic is. You must have had some experience
I
after your
one
books
once.
Were published, Mr. Bell. The answer is Saul. Beg your pardon?
No.
All right. Saul, who threw a spear at David while David was playing the harp. Your
I
mind
had David
was playing
on the wrong
David,
game.
But you just had the wrong man. Yes. Rather pointed criticism. Well, we got one wrong. We were supposed to get 5 out of 5. Canada Dry is going to send $10 to Mr. Upton Sinclair with his compliments. Now, the next question comes from an equally celebrated personage. One of your competitors, Mr. Stout. I notice that your smile has suddenly erased itself. This question comes from Mr. Ellery Queen, who also writes detective stories. Very good ones, Mr. Stout, too.
Yes,
very
indeed.
Good ones. Yes, indeed. What striking similarity exists between the following? I have to get 4 out of 5 on this. Neville Chamberlain and Father Brown. Neville Chamberlain and Father Brown. Mr. Stout.
My answer involves a political criticism. Shall I give it anyway, Mr. Fathom?
All I care for is the facts. Are the facts? Is the facts?
Both moribund.
Both moribund. I hardly know what moribund means. No, I think that would not be the answer. Mr. Kieran.
Both carried umbrellas.
Both habitually carry an umbrella. That's quite right, yes. Now the second. What striking similarity exists between Albert Einstein and Sherlock Holmes? Mr. Kieran.
Both play the fiddle.
Both play the fiddle. Very good. What striking similarity exists between Mussolini and Hercule Poirot? Ah, Mr. Stout.
Both bald.
Both bald. Very good. That's right. Between Joseph P. Kennedy and Charlie Chan. Joseph P. Kennedy and Charlie Chan. We're bringing together odd bedfellows this evening,
did
gentlemen.
Charlie Chan have
Charlie
nine children?
Chan. He did, yes. And
well,
what does Joseph P. Kennedy have?
Nine children.
Yes, that's right. Thank you, Mr. Hart. Very neatly done. And Tony Galento and Nero Wolfe. In deference to Mr. Stout, Tony Galento and Nero Wolfe. Mr. Hart.
Food.
Yes, both have a passion for what beverage, would you say?
Beer,
yes. And both are very fat men. Would you like to add anything to my description of Nero Wolfe, Mr. Stout?
I think that's enough.
I'm going to give you 1 second, and it's over. Mr. Hart.
Nero Wolfe has never played low estate. That's the difference.
Tony Galento doesn't like orchids.
We're learning a lot about Tony Galento. The next question from Chester E. Floyd of Danbury, Connecticut, involves your knowledge of sports. Define and indicate in which game or sport each of the following terms is used. Luff, huff, rough, buff, and sluff. I defy anybody to say that more quickly. Luff. Look, Mr. Kieran.
Sailing.
Sailing. What does it mean?
Well, it means to pull up into the wind.
Pull up into the wind. Very good. Huff, H-U-F-F. I don't know whether you cover this sport, Mr. Kieran. Mr. Hart.
When you leave any place in a huff.
That isn't a game.
Yes, you wouldn't call leaving a place a sport, exactly.
Yes, some places.
Some places.
Places.
Yes. Yes, some places. I'd like to take it, but I can't. It's a technical term in checkers. It means the removal of a player's piece from the board after he's neglected to capture his opponent's piece. Do you gentlemen play checkers?
But that's a huff.
We don't forget.
That is a huff, yes. I want you to remember that. One wrong. A rough, R-U-F-F. Mr. Stout.
R-U-F-F.
R-U-F-F, yes.
That's Queen Elizabeth. I was thinking of R-O-U-G-H for golf.
Yes, but I can't let you have that. Sorry. Mr. Kieran.
Rough and bridge.
Yes, what does it mean?
Trump. Yes, Trump. When you're blanking one.
Very good. Sorry. And how about buff? B-U-F-F. Tricky one. Not exactly a sport, more of a game. Mr. Kieran.
A fire buff is a fellow who plays the game of running to fires when he doesn't really belong.
Never thought of that. What a fancy you have, Mr. Kieran. What a fancy. Did you ever play the game of blindman's buff? Mr. Adams, you probably have played the game of blindman's buff. With your little children?
It's not a sport, though.
Yes, oh, it can be. Yes, it can be. Well played. Blindman's buff is as fine a sport as any clean living man.
Haven't they?
Buff to buff it, to push.
Yes,
or
I was runner-up in a game like that one.
Blindman's bluff. And fifth and last.
Oh, it's bluff.
No, it was buff all along.
Buff, I see.
Slough. S-L-O-U-G-H. Mr. Hart.
Bridge.
In bridge, what does it mean?
I have no idea.
Well, the answer is correct. However, what does it mean, Mr. Stout?
To slough means to throw off a card when you cannot follow suit and do not wish to trump.
That's right. Now, we were supposed to get 5 out of 5, and we didn't get 5 out of 5. Mr. Floyd is going to get $10 with the compliments of Canada Dry. Thank you. The next question from Mr. A. Johnson of Chicago, Illinois, involves your knowledge of animals. What animal is associated with truffles? Truffles. T-R-U-F-F-F-F-F-L-E-S. Mr. Stout.
Pigs.
Pigs. What are truffles?
Truffles are things that pigs snoot out so we can eat them.
Yes.
Why, it's a... it's a fungus.
Isn't it, though?
Yes.
Don't be so contemptuous. That's quite right. They're a French delicacy, an underground fungus. Pemmican. What animal associated with pemmican? Mr. Stout again.
Pemmican is a canned meat.
Canned meat drawn, taken from what animal?
Pemmicans.
A pemmican is not... You're thinking of a pelican, no doubt.
Yes, that's correct.
I'm sorry not to be able to change the M into an L for you. From what animals?
Pemmican.
Beef, yes.
Beef.
Buffalo, deer, or steer, sure. Lean buffalo meat, cut into thin slices, and used by...
Northern explorers.
Yes, northern and southern explorers, too. Yes, northern and southern. Let's be fair, Mr. Adams. Let's be fair to the south as well as the north.
Used for dog food.
There you are, always putting your realistic note in, Mr.
Kieran.
Pack
the pack dogs.
How about pâté de foie gras? Pâté de foie gras. Pâté de foie gras. Mr. Kieran.
That's one know what kind of food it is?
No, I want to know what animal is associated with it.
Goose.
A goose, yes.
Comes from, it's a goose's liver.
Yes, I've always
and
wondered how the
goose
spelled with all those little earthenware jars
fat
inside
goose
of it. And chitterling, or chitlins, as we really should say, Mr. Adams.
Pig.
Pig, swine, if you will, Mr. Adams. What are chitlins?
I don't know.
Mr. Hart, do you know what chitlins are?
I don't know why I know this, but it's the intestine.
Yes, you've got a hard life, I can say that. Smaller intestines of swine, fried or boiled, and sometimes filled with meat chopped fine and highly spiced.
I come of peasant stock.
Long way off, though. Canada Dry announces a loss to date now of $40. After a word from Mr. Cross, I'll tell you who our experts will be for next week.
There are just 2 points I wish to raise. First, when you dine out at your favorite restaurant, club, or hotel, be sure to order sparkling Canada Dry water. You'll find your favorite drink tastes better and lasts longer. And secondly, write for your copy of the second edition of the Information Please game. It's easy to obtain and a lot of fun to play. All you have to do is send 2 bottle caps, or if you prefer, the large labels from any 2 bottles of Canada Dry's many beverages. Mail these 2 bottle caps or 2 labels in an envelope with 10 cents to cover postage and handling to Canada Dry, 1 Pershing Square, New York City. If you live in Canada, the address is Canada Dry, Toronto, Ontario. Of course, include your own name and address, too. So send us your 10 cents, 2 bottle caps or 2 labels, and the second edition of the Information Please game is yours.
Thank you, Mr. Cross, and thank you, guests, experts, Stout and Hart, for lending us your brains this evening. The lineup for next week. Mr. Levant, Mr. Kieran, Mr. Adams, the old reliable triple play combination. Guest expert, by popular request, the lady who 2 weeks ago distinguished herself both by her charm and her erudition, that brilliant artist in the fields of the short story and light verse, Miss Dorothy Parker. Don't forget now, letters with questions are to be addressed to Information Please, Canada Dry, 1 Pershing Square, New York City.
You'll find Canada Dry Ginger Ale, Sparkling Water, Lime Ricky, and Tom Collins Mixer wherever fine beverages are sold. The large family size is very economical, costing only 15 cents a bottle. And remember, there's a favorite Canada Dry drink for every member of your family. This is Milton Cross inviting you to join us now in a glass of refreshing Canada Dry.
Everyone, this is your old chief quizzer himself, Joe Kelly, presenting America's famous quiz kid. Today we have a special treat for all you listeners because the quiz kids are competing with five distinguished visitors who have come here from various parts of the world to attend the International Trade Fair. Now, this is the first international trade fair ever to be held, and we are naturally very proud to have it here in Chicago and to have five distinguished representatives take part on this program. The purpose of the fair is to encourage and facilitate trade relations among all countries throughout the world. So, I'd like to have you meet our panel of quiz kids for today and our guests from foreign lands. First, we have Quiz Kid Joel.
I'm Joel Kupperman. I'm 14 years old, and I'm a junior at Roosevelt High School.
Lonnie?
I'm Lonnie Lundy. I'm 14 years old, and I will be a sophomore at Maine Township High School in Park Ridge, Illinois.
Patrick?
I'm Patrick Owen Conlon. I'm 13 years old, and in the fall I'll be a freshman at Calumet High School in Chicago.
Harvey?
I'm Harvey Thatch. I'm 7 years old. I go to Hibbert School, and I'm grade 3B.
And Frankie?
I'm Frankie Vanderplug. I'm 6 years old, and I'm at 1B at the Mount Vernon School, Chicago, Illinois.
And competing with the quiz kids, we have Mr. Nielsen from Denmark.
I am Niels Nielsen from the Copenhagen, the capital of Denmark. According to my birth certificate, I am 33, but I really feel like a baby sitting right here before the mic. I came over here to Chicago to organize the Danish textile exhibition at the International Trade Fair. We bring over some selected Danish textile goods to show to American public what kind of goods we have over here and what is our daily wear. And we hope that we can create some sales at the same time.
Fine. Now next we have a very lovely lady, Mrs. Moretis from Greece.
I'm Mrs. Alexandra Moretis, architect from Athens, Greece. I came here to organize the Greek participation in the first international trade fair. And today we have the Greek day at the international trade fair, which I missed just to attend your quiz program here.
All right. Well, it's nice having you here. Next, we have Dr. Shen of China.
I'm Walter Yuanhuan Chen from China. Well, I stayed in Hong Kong. I just flew across the Pacific to this country to participate in the International Trade Fair. I represent China Arts Trading Company, exhibiting all the handmade craft of the Chinese, especially embroidery, cloisonne, and jewelry and curios. And there's every day there's a big crowd around my booths. I hope my fellow students would like to have a look at my booth. Probably they'll interest them.
I hope so, Dr. Shen. I notice you have your own little quiz kid with you, your son.
That's right.
What is his name, by the way?
What's your name?
Can you give us your name, son?
Leon.
Hurry up.
Hurry up.
Come on, tell us your name.
His name is Leon.
Oh, Leon.
Yeah.
Fine, and how old is he?
He's 3 and a half.
3 and a half, fine. Well, now let's see, who's next? Yes, we have Mr. Krause from Germany.
Well, my name is Reinhold Max Krause, and I think I'm here really the oldest quiz kid, you know, being 60 years old, and I can prove it with my bald head, you see. Well, I'm representing the German exhibitors at the International Fair as their chairman for their committee, and we came over from Germany just a week before the fair opened. We are doing business now. We're very glad of doing it. Well, fine. You know, a funny thing happened. I was talking with Mr. Krause before the program. I asked him, should I call him Mr. Krause or Dr. Krause? And he said, no, Mr. Krause. And I said, well, what are you going to call me? And he says, Mr. Kelly. I said, fine, don't call me Hair Kelly because it wouldn't work out too good. I had to take
he wanted hand. To call me doctor. You know, I've never been a doctor.
And last but not least, we have Mr. Fisher from Scotland.
My name is Maxwell Fisher from Great Britain. I also have a bald head, and I'm in my very early 40s. I came over here about 4 months ago as advance agent and troubleshooter, you call it in the United States, for the European Trade Fair Board to coordinate the participation of the Marshall Plan countries.
All right. Well, now, since you folks have met our contestants, we'll get right down to schoolwork with questions. And you adults, you all know the rules. Whoever gets his hand up first gets first chance to answer a question. Remember now, no talking in the classroom unless you raise your hand. And I might add that we have an interpreter, Mr. Cardaris, in class with us, in case any of you do not understand a question. I insisted that he sit here beside me in case I do not understand some of your answers. And before we start on questions, just to help make our guests feel at home today, I wondered if any of you quiz kids can say any greeting or anything at all in any of the native languages of our competitors, except English, of course. And perhaps our guests can reply to the children's greetings in their native language. Who would like... Harvey?
Bonjour, monsieur. Comment allez-vous?
Oh, is that so? Well, say, we're really off with one. Would anyone of the adults like to reply to... What did you say, Harvey? What does that mean?
That was French. He means, well, that was French. Comment allez-vous?
Oh?
How do you do, he said in French.
All right, so how do you say that? How do you reply in
très
German?
Très bien, monsieur. Je me porte très bien. Ça va bon?
How would you reply in German, Mr. Krause?
Mir geht's sehr gut.
Mir geht's gut?
Yeah, mir oh, geht's yeah, sehr yeah. gut, ja.
Sure. All right. Well, now, Frankie, what have you, Frankie?
Oh, I can't say any words in other languages, but I can sing a song in French, and it's called Frère Jacques.
Oh, I see. Well, I'll tell you what, we'll maybe sing a little bit later on in the program, but right now we're making salutations in various languages. Lonnie, I think, has one.
Well, I don't have a greeting, but I thought I understood you to say a greeting or something else in the language.
All right.
Well, I can, in Greek, I could say the names of some fraternities and sororities.
That's cute. All right, Lonnie, let's have one or two.
Well, my dad is an Alpha Tau Omega.
Oh.
And my sister is an Alpha Omicron Pi.
Uh-huh.
And my uncle is a Sigma Chi. And my brother-in-law is a Phi Kappa Psi.
Uh-huh. You know, I used to belong to the I Eat a Piece of Pie. And I think everybody knows what that means. Well, are we all through? I'll tell you what, I'm anxious to get to our first question, and here it is. It's sort of a worldwide question. Which would you say is higher? Now, remember, first hand up gets first chance to answer. Which would you say is higher, the Washington Monument, the Leaning Tower of Pisa, or the Eiffel Tower? Mrs. Moretis.
I think the Eiffel Tower is the highest.
Well, you're thinking very good, because that's absolutely right. Eiffel Tower is 985 feet, the Washington Monument 555, the Leaning Tower of Pisa 179. Well, good for you, Mrs. Moretis. Now, here's a little nature question for you folks. What reptile is a natural submarine, and can you explain why? Harvey.
Well, the crocodile, while hunting its prey, has its nostrils above the water.
Well, and what reptile is this now?
The crocodile.
The crocodile, that's right.
And then when he goes underwater, he has a special closing device for his nostrils, which allows him to stay underwater for a long time.
A special closing device. Now, how do you like that for 7 years old? That's very good, Harvey.
This discussion question is addressed to our guests from other countries. What expressions in conversation or what customs of our country did you find amusing or confusing when you visited the United States for the first time? Who would like to start this off? Mr. Nielsen?
Well, I feel that you very often say, you're welcome. And if I should translate that to my own language, it would very often cause some embarrassment.
And it would?
Yes, certainly.
Oh? Would you care to explain, or?
Well, I could say it was just like an invitation or something like that.
Oh, I see. Mm-hmm. Well, how about the rest of you folks? Mrs. Moretis?
Yes, I must go back 10 years ago when I had my first impressions of this country. And I remember that some friend of ours took us to a drugstore. And you see, in Greece we have the drugstores are very sober stores, because only when you have somebody ill in your house, you are going there to buy drugs. And I enter in the drugstore and say, I saw there that they were selling everything and people eating and no Warm drugs clock. At all.
Yes.
And at the end, we go through the store to a door behind and we go downstairs to the subway. Oh. That was very peculiar, and I used to tell it in my friends to Greece. And we were amused.
I'll bet you were at that. Well, I guess we're pretty used to that here. How about you, Dr. Shen? How about an expression that you've heard over here that amuses you or confuses you or maybe some customs?
Well, I was in this country before.
Oh? Well, I mean when you first came to the United States.
I was here in the last fair in 1934.
Oh, I see.
And one thing I find very funny is that the average waist of American ladies seems to be a little greater than the last time I saw.
Oh!
I bet if my wife hears that, that would cause trouble.
The American men are not doing too bad, especially the chief quizzers. Oh, dear, dear, dear. Well, and how about you, Mr. Fisher?
Well, I don't like to talk about girths anymore. Yeah. But when I first came over here, I picked up the telephone and I asked the operator for a number. And there was a short silence, and then she suddenly turned around and said, "Are you through?" And I said, "Yes," and she cut me off. Well, because, of course, in my country, if you say you're through, you mean you're through to the other person, you see.
Oh!
And that's happened all along. And apart from the fact that you drive on the wrong side of the road, I think everything's absolutely swell over here.
That's very, very good. And finally, Mr. Krause.
I enjoyed it very much. I hadn't to take off my hat here. You know, when you're in Germany, you greet somebody in your street, you always have to bow and take off your hat.
Oh?
And now my hat remains quite clean because I needn't always take it off, you see.
I see.
That's very pleasant.
Well, now, do any of you quiz kids happen to know of any expressions or customs of other countries that might be amusing or confusing to you? Patty?
Well, I know when you go to England, of course, I've never been there, but, you know, see a lot of English pictures. I know what they call streetcars trams, and I think they call elevators lifts, and I wouldn't know how to get into a car that had the steering wheel on the other side.
Harvey?
Well, the Chinese eat shark fin soup and bird's nest soup, so I don't think that would be pretty confusing to me.
Well, I've had the privilege of enjoying those delicacies myself, and they're very, very tasty. Joel?
Well, don't the Chinese have all their writings backwards, reading from the right instead of from the left? And I'm sure I'd find that very confusing.
How about that, Dr. Shen? Is that right?
The Chinese way goes vertically.
Oh.
And from right to left, uh-huh, instead of left to right.
Oh.
That's how the Chinese writing goes.
Uh-huh. And let's see, Pat has his hand up.
Well, I just remembered the Chinese, of course, eat their rice with chopsticks. I don't know about their other foods, but I don't know how I'd do so well if I had eaten.
There is another thing I want to say about soup.
About soup?
The bird nest soup or shark's fin soup. The Chinese eat the soup afterwards. While here...
For dessert, like, huh?
That's right.
Oh? Well, I really don't blame them, because, as I said before, it's very, very tasty.
Yes.
Well, now, if... here's our next question. If you had your choice between operating a Spitfire, a Meteor, or a Vampire, which would you choose? Mr. Fisher.
Well, quite obviously, one would choose a jet aircraft these days, because they're much faster... much more higher-powered, and they are better gunned than the poor old Spitfire that one used to fly in 1940.
The one that you used to fly, you say?
Yes, I did.
Oh, is that so? In World War II?
Yes.
Well, what do you know about that? It's very, very interesting. Now, for our next question, you contestants are to hear parts of some well-known songs played by our chief organist, Uncle Lou Webb. And you are to try to identify them and sing them in any language except English. All right, here's number one. Mr. Krause.
Du, du liegst mir im Herzen, du, du liegst mir im Sinn. Du, du machst mir viel Schmerzen, weißt nicht, wie gut ich dir bin.
Ah, wunderbar, fine. You know, quiz kid Lundy had his hand up. What were you going to say, Lonnie?
Well, I was just going to identify the song as You Are the One.
Oh? Is that right, Mr. Krause?
I think so.
What do you mean
right?
You think so?
I hope he has some experience already with 14.
Oh!
I had it when I was 14.
All right, let's listen to the next one. Mrs. Moretis.
Yes.
What?
That's, we used to sing it in Greece.
Oh? What's the name of it?
Εγώ και εσύ θα αγαπιόμαστε.
Will I, just a minute, I confer with the interpreter here. What does that mean?
You and I like each other. Μπορείς να τραγουδήσεις ελληνικά?
Yes.
All right, well, can you sing it in...
Yes, with the organ, please, because I forgot.
All right, Lou.
Εγώ και εσύ. Έλα οι δυο να γαζόμαστε μαζί, εσύ κι εγώ. Σαν καλιά και φιλιά από το βράδυ ως το πρωί, εγώ κι εσύ.
That's very, very fine, Mrs. Moretis, very fine. Now, here's a real brain teaser. You are to tell which came first in each of the following cases. Which came first? Vasco da Gama's trip to India, the Children's Crusade to the Holy Land, or Magellan's trip around the world? Pat?
Well, Vasco da Gama's trip was in 1498.
Right.
And the Children's Crusade was in 1200, or I think the Children's Crusade came first, now that I remember.
That's right, Patty. Yes, that's correct. Children's Crusade was in 1212. That's B.A. before Alka-Seltzer. What am I saying here? Oh, my goodness sake. Well, which came first? The Ming Dynasty, the Chao Dynasty, or the Mongol Dynasty? Dr. Shen.
The Chao Dynasty.
That's right, Dr. Shen. That's right, the Chao Dynasty. If you join the following groups of people, what might you find them discussing? Pierce, Houtman, and Rashi. Lonnie.
Well, baseball, because they're all pitchers.
They're all pitchers, correct. How about O'Dwyer, Samuel, Burke? Joel?
Well, they're all mayors. O'Dwyer's mayor of New York.
That's right.
Burke's mayor of Cleveland. I don't know what Samuel.
Bernard Samuel.
Yeah, isn't he?
That is
Bernard
right.
Samuel.
Mr. Krause is correct. I must remind you, Mr. Krause, what I told you at the first of the program. You must hold up your hand when you want to talk.
Yes, well, I'm next. I'm learning it, you know.
Say, by the way, Mr. Krause, I have heard that you have invitations that you can give some of the mayors you've met in the United States. Could you give us a couple? How about Mayor O'Dwyer of New York City?
Well, I'm sorry, I never met him.
Oh?
So I can't imitate him, and I'm not very strong at imitating, you know. But I can tell you something about the mayor.
Mayor Samuel of Philadelphia?
Samuel, yes, from Philadelphia.
All right.
He was very nice to me when I looked him up and asked him to come to Chicago and see the big city of Chicago. He right away said, well, the only city in this country naturally is Philadelphia. And he wants to have the international fair next year in Philadelphia. I told him, no, we are all going to Chicago again because this is the place.
Hooray for you!
He looked a little, he looked at this and he looked at me. He thought, well, I'm quite well fed. And he said, well, you're a fellow I want to give the key of the city of Philadelphia. And he gave me a very nice key to open the city hall. Wow. I didn't get this here from Chicago yet, you know. I think they have got bigger and greater safes here. You know? They want to be sure not to have... Well, I got a very nice key anyway from him.
Well, you're all right, Mr. Krause. Yes, sir. Now then, you folks are to answer... base your answers to this question on actual historical facts. Would it have been possible to have read the following as newspaper headlines? Here's the first one. See and hear this big double feature Mozart and Haydn play together. Lonnie?
Well, yes, because Mozart was born in 1756.
Right.
And died before the turn of the century, and Haydn was born in 1732 and died in 1809. And
yes.
They played together several times.
That's right, so they did. Good boy, Lonnie. Now then, here's the next headline. Young Brahms highly praised by Schubert. Joel.
Well, Schubert died in, I think, around 1830, around there. And while Brahms lived, I think, around from 1840 to 1880.
So would it have
so been... So it wouldn't have been possible.
It would not have been possible. That's right. And here's the last one. Opening night of new Bach opera. Her Majesty Queen Marie Antoinette may attend. Lonnie.
Well, by Bach, I presume you don't necessarily mean Johann Sebastian Bach. So Queen Marie Antoinette could certainly hear a Bach opera because Bach's musical sons, lived for a long time after Johann Sebastian. And I think the Bach who wrote the most famous opera would be Johann Christian Bach.
That's right, Lottie. Very good. Very, very good. Now, tell me this. Where might you find each of these quotations... They are all in different languages. Here's the first one, E Pluribus Unum. Pat?
Well, that's Together We Stand. Anyway, you'd find it on the coins of the United States, because that's their motto.
That's right, that's correct. Uh-huh. And how about this next one, Aaron Gobrah? Mr. Fisher?
That is Erse, or Irish. And it means Ireland forever.
So it does. That's right. That's right. And you would find it on the Irish flag beneath the harp. Now, where would you find this last one? Schriebste mir, schriebste ihr, schriebste auf M.K. Papier.
No,
that's
really
for an Irishman now.
He nearly gets it, but it doesn't mean... It reads as follows. Schreibst du mir, schreibst du ihr, schreibst du auf dem Karpapier. Teacher, you have to learn that properly. Well, next time.
Well, then it wasn't
now,
so
you know
good
what
for
that
an
means in English?
Yes?
That means I write to you and you write to me. But on MK paper, it must be.
Oh.
And that MK paper, well, that's the paper which we manufacture. That's why I'm the man of...
Well, good
MK
for you. Now, just for fun, let's see what you contestants can do with a tongue twister. First, I'm going to try you quiz kids on a tongue twister written in Danish. And then I'll try our other team on one in English. All right, here's the one for you children, if I can read it.
Firor Flada Flada Floda. I think I got some of that all over me here. Who would like to try it? Patrick?
Well, Firor Flada Flada Floda.
Well, we got to say it faster than that. Lonnie?
Firor Flada Flada Floda.
Well, you're off on the first word there a little bit. Joel?
Firor Flada Flada Floda.
Well, that's pretty good. Incidentally, I think we'd better have Mr. Nielsen explain to us what that is. What does that mean, Mr. Nielsen?
It just means four flat dishes of cream.
Four flat dishes of cream.
And I think Pat did it right good.
Well, good for you. Fine. Now then, we'll see what you older folks can do. Let's see what you can do with an old favorite of ours here in this country. Peter Piper picked a peck of pickled peppers. There's a doozer. Mr. Nielsen.
Peter Piper picked a peck of pickled paper.
Well, I would say that was a good try. Who else would like to try this? Mr. Krause?
Well, I'll try it. Peter... I can't get it. Peter Piper picked a pickle of pickled paper.
And,
I can't do it.
You can't say it.
No, no.
That's really a mouthful, isn't it? Well, all right. Now let's see if you listeners can answer this one along with our contestants. How many baseball players can you mention whose names contain points of the compass? You know, their names have to contain the word east, west, north, or south. Patrick.
Well, there's Ron Northey of the Cubs.
Fine.
And down in the Pacific Coast League, there's Max West.
Very good.
Mm-hmm. Right off.
Lonnie?
Well, there's Luke Easter, and there's Wes Westrum, and there used to be a player with the New York Giants named Hugh East.
Well, that's good enough for me, and of course I hear our school bell, and that means that school is over for today. Now, in just a minute, we'll find out which of these two mighty teams competing in our classroom is the winner while the judges are totaling their scores. I wish to remind all you listeners about the wonderful work that the organization CARE is doing all over the world. Let us not forget all those in Europe these days who are hungry day after day. Whatever the United States government is doing to rehabilitate foreign economies, the help of individuals in providing immediate day-to-day help must go on. Because it is nonprofit and because of its large volume, CARE makes it possible to send more per dollar than individuals or groups can send any other way. If you wish to help, just send $10 or $5.50 to CARE, CARE, New York. More information about CARE packages may be obtained at CARE offices throughout the country. Well, now let's see. The judges are ready with the big news of who won, the Quiz Kids team or the International Whiz Kids team. Let's see here. Judges say the Quiz Kids scored 1,249 points, and the International Whiz Kids made 1,249 points. And, of course, that ties the score. So congratulations to both teams. Now, Quiz Kids, each of you will receive your usual award to help you with your future education. And as for our guests, we are going to complete the initiation of making you honorary Quiz Kids by pinning on each of you the official Quiz Kid pin. And I want to thank all of you guests for entering into the program with such wonderful spirit. It has certainly been an interesting half hour to me, and I feel sure our listeners have enjoyed meeting you as much as I have. And I hope you'll all come back and visit our Quiz Kid classroom again. So class is dismissed, and I'll see all you children back next week. So until then, goodbye, little Quiz Kids.
Goodbye, Mr. Kelly.
Goodbye, big Quiz Kids.
Goodbye,
Mr. Kelly.
Quiz Kids is produced by Lewis G. Cowan. Programs, get your programs here. Jack Parr asked the questions tonight on Take It or Leave It as fortunate contestants try for the $64 question and for the jackpot. The Pet Milk Show features thrilling songstress Kay Armon with Emil Cote Esquire and Orchestra and a refreshing half hour of music designed for your listening pleasure. That's tonight on NBC.
That's it for this week. We'll be back next week with more old-time radio. I hope you can join us then. Till then, this is Jim Dolan thanking you for listening.